There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. 107 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile, Monday style. Glad to have you here. Got comments from the president earlier in last hour. And working off of what has been a process, number one, a campaign promise from President Trump, then candidate Trump. Number two, is somewhat paid off with the Mexico negotiation and that discussion. And then the Canadians were the third leg of the stool that were not in until really deadline time over the weekend. It looks like, at least according to the news story, too, that Jared Kushner, son-in-law, being praised here, Lighthizer as well, but Jared Kushner coming in, I guess, for the assist, or maybe he scored the point. I don't know, but Kushner supposedly a big deal in this as well, the negotiation with the Canadians. So now you have a trilateral trade deal laid out here between Mexican leader Enrique Peña Nieto, who's leaving office, but right now the leader of Mexico, Justin Trudeau out of Canada, and of course President Trump working this deal. Now, it is the North American... It used to be North American Free Trade Agreement, right? NAFTA. Now it is the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement. As many have said on the text line, it's almost like the United States Marine Corps, just with an A on the end of it. USMCA. Cameron Smith from the R Street Institute and AL.com. Are you saying USMCA or are you just saying USMCA? What's the word down in Washington? How do people refer to this?
NAFTA 2. Is much easier to say.
NAFTA 2, the electric boogaloo.
Like, bring a better acronym game. I mean, come on.
You know, I'm actually very, this will be one of the things out of this that makes me happy, very happy with President Trump, because, you know, I'm annoyed because I think they spend a lot more time in Washington thinking up nifty names to have a cute acronym versus, you know, actually working on the policy. So here it seems the acronym is not the greatest, so maybe that time was spent on the policy. Do we know what the... I mean, there's a few things the president laid out there when it comes to steel and it comes to dairy and a few others. Do you have any insight into details on this?
Well, I haven't. At our street, we have a trade guy, Clark Packard, who is very talented, is jumping in all of this. The challenge is, okay, now we have the text of a deal. We got to take a look at it and, you know, do the famous, we have to see what's in there, preferably before Congress approves it. But that's the problem. That's the challenge with any major trade deal, is you got to corral votes to get it approved. You got to get all the different contingencies I mentioned when we were off air, copyright issues, trade issues involving steel, involving a wide range of products and services. And so every industry, everybody that's got a stake in this trade agreement is going to have a voice, and they're going to be calling their representation and saying, hey, senators, here's what we think, here's what we like, here's what's good, here's what's bad. I suspect House members will weigh in as well. You'll get a lot of folks that are have an opinion here, and so corralling the votes is really, even once we understand the details, corralling votes is going to be a challenge on the Hill, and I believe the president said as much.
All right, well, okay, good. So help me with an example. So never spent time in Washington for sure, but not in an official capacity. So from your time in Washington, what is that like? How does that work? So something like this is done. The president's signed off on this deal. Then how does it work? Is it individual members of Congress coming up and saying, hey, that exclusion for such and such, we really, I can't help. Do they come in and say, I can't help you on this other thing if that goes through? Or do they say, hey, this constituency that voted for you really doesn't want that? I mean, how does it sound when that's done?
Well, it's the nose counting on the votes. I mean, it's pretty straightforward that, you know, this trade agreement will have to go up for a vote. And the we're in the phase now where the sausage is made, where we've got a deal in principle that everybody, Canada, Mexico, and the U.S., seem from the negotiating table to say, okay, we can live with this. Then everybody's going to read it. They're going to be reading it right now. Some folks have already been reading it, trying to figure out how it impacts them, their industries, their labor unions, their pick your poison, whatever their stake is that's mentioned or referenced in the agreement will be a parochial interest. And so you'll have a bunch of different groups this week, next week, jumping in, trying to get a seat at the table, seeing like, okay, can we give this a nudge one way, this a nudge another way, and frankly still hold the deal together while working to get the votes to get it approved. And so that's the really interesting balance in any of the major trade deals is you get an idea in principle, you get something that people can support rhetorically, then they start reviewing the details, and sometimes that support calculation changes.
It's interesting to see how a deal, whatever would be in the details here, to enforce reciprocity. A deal, basically the president talked a couple times about a reciprocal nature. You know, if the deal is this way for this country, then they treat the other country that way. It's basically like having to enforce free trade to some degree, right? I mean, it's having to, what would be decided in the marketplace if your vendor is treating you right, or your person you're selling to is treating you right, then you treat each other right in the deal and everybody agrees to it. It almost seems like we're going to codify that in some trade agreement.
Yeah, but it's things that are a lot more technical that you probably wouldn't even think about intuitively. One of the terms that we were looking at Art Street was, okay, so what is the term here in terms of copyright? Because you want other nations to recognize your intellectual property. And so you've got to have a deal on, well, are we going to recognize this for life plus 75 years? Or what is the term that we're ultimately going to settle upon for which we will recognize a copyright? Well, we're talking steel and all kinds of other things that make the big headlines, but one provision in a trade agreement that has an unacceptable copyright deal might be enough to tank it. I mean, if the groups that care about that copyright provision have enough clout, that could be a non-starter. And so there's a lot of this happening in the formulation of the deal, happening when you're looking at votes. And so I think what's interesting here is it's very, very complicated. This is not a single piece of, for example, it's not a bill to do one thing. It's a trade agreement that talks about how these three countries will treat a wide range of products in the marketplace and what treatment they will give when they cross borders. And that's a big deal, and it's something that I'm telling you, a ton of people are paying attention to this one.
I'm talking with Cameron Smith from the R Street Institute and AL.com. You've said copyright a couple times. Let me stick with that for a second, because where would the analog be? Not saying that the Canadians don't produce movies, film, and music, obviously. I mean, we wouldn't have Doug and Bob McKenzie and the band Rush without Canada. I mean, there's absolutely products coming from the other countries, but out of the three, the big Magilla in this one when it comes to copyright, for at least the entertainment world, let alone, software, things like that, let's stick with entertainment, is going to be the United States. So if there's not an analog on the other side, if there's not something of equal value in trademarks, for example, or copyrights, for example, how do you balance that out in one of these deals? I mean, if they don't have, you can say, hey, we won't, we'll enforce your copyright laws and trademarks here in the United States, but they don't have that much, and we have a whole bunch there. How do you even that?
Well, I mean, honestly, on a situation like that where we're the driver, where we're sure, the one that has the bulk of, let's say, intellectual property, then that's the thing that we really care about. Then they may not care about it as much. And so that may be a situation where, we can get some pretty favorable terms to us. We can largely dictate that. On the other hand, there may be something, along manufacturing lines. I mean, it could be specialized manufacturing, it could be auto manufacturing, any number of different things that they may care about. And so you're not always looking for necessarily parity in one specific provision.
Okay.
It could be, well, this may be a slightly better deal for us on, let's say, copyright, but we're going to give up a little bit of ground on tariffs or manufacturing type things. And the idea being, in aggregate, everybody can live with it.
Okay.
Some get a little more in one area, some get a little more in another.
All right. Okay, so it's it doesn't have to have parity. It doesn't have to be an exact analog. It can be just at the end of it, all three member states here feel like they've gotten a decent deal, a decent shake.
Sure. I mean, at the end of the day, you got to go back to your constituents and voters and say, hey, we did this deal. It's a good deal. Here's why it's a good deal. And that's part of the problem with, or part of the challenge with big trade deals, is you got to explain it pretty succinctly why we are better off doing this than, let's say, the prior iteration of NAFTA. And explain it in a way that average people can hear, because people kind of formed their opinions on NAFTA, and they said, well, here's where it was. And so if this is just NAFTA 2, is this a good deal for us? And I think it's incumbent on the White House to drive the messaging and say, hey, this is a result of a lot of work. It's better for America, and here's why. And then ultimately, I mean, that's going to determine whether this thing happens or just kind of falls apart.
All right, coming right back, more with Cameron Smith from AL.com and the R Street Institute. Talk a little more about this, but also the fight over Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. Is this the sure thing it was weeks ago? Is it in limbo? Will they call for a vote after the FBI investigation? He'll fill us in when we come back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 120 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, Monday style. Hanging out with my buddy Cameron Smith, R Street Institute, AL.com. Read his opinion work over at AL.com. And at some point, we'll get back into nerdy insurance talk on the R Street side here. Today, continue our conversation of Washington. And wow, you know, this is what I didn't see happening. I thought Brett Kavanaugh looked like a pretty good choice for President Trump and somebody who could get confirmed this year. But now that's in question, right?
Yeah, I think it's in question. The fact that judiciary out Kavanaugh, they took a vote. We talked on the air when that was happening, leads me to the conclusion that absent even more information or something to corroborate, or the FBI saying we need more time, I think that Kavanaugh will be confirmed. But there's a lot riding on this week. This is the time the FBI is looking into it. It's a little bit weird that Democrats and some of the media have positioned this as sort of a compromise, because Democrats aren't going to vote for Kavanaugh. There's nothing to compromise here. They're not going to say, oh, well, the FBI looked into it, so now we're good. We're going to vote to confirm
Right, that's
them.
A good point.
They gave up nothing.
Yeah,
so it's not really a compromise. This is a flake condition.
Okay, double down on that, because this idea that Democrats are reaching across the aisle on this is bupkis. I mean, the flake was the one who came in with the audible right there while you and I were talking on Friday, and it is intra-party, not inter-party, if I see it the same way you do.
Yeah, I mean, it might have been inter-party in the sense that he talked to him and said, hey, here's what I'm going to do, and I think this is fair. Do you think it's fair? And, of course, they would say, well, hey, anything that gives us a little bit of delay, we like. So, yeah, we're fair, we're good, everyone's happy. Well, that's not actually a deal. That's just him telling them what he was going to do. And I don't that's neither here nor there in terms of, like, the situation. We're looking at a week delay. FBI is going to look at this. I think FBI is going to act like they did with Clinton and Juanita Broderick and say, hey, inconclusive. Like, maybe something happened. We don't really know, and we can't give you anything definitively at this point. So we're kind of back where we started, as a judgment call regarding allegations. And, you know, do I think that senators, and particularly Republicans, well, and Democrats, for that matter, are going to change their vote on an inconclusive from the FBI? No. And in that sense, I think they would not have taken a preliminary vote on Kavanaugh. They didn't have a pretty good indication that absent additional information, he was going to be confirmed.
All right. I mean, because this is, you know, you had Democrats screaming, wanting Schumer and others wanting this FBI investigation. The second the FBI investigation is launched, well, it's not a good enough of an FBI investigation. So, but like you said, this is all kabuki theater because it's not like Schumer was going to vote to confirm either way. I mean, I don't know why it's more about what the Republicans are thinking. And you're talking about Jeff Flake, but is he running cover? Is he running cover for other senators?
Well, I think Democrats must just assume that Republicans can't count, because the way we solve these disputes is by voting, and that is how we resolve whether Kavanaugh will be confirmed or not. And Flake, I understand his point. I mean, he wants to say, I want to make sure we're doing what's right here and that we've got every piece of information we can get that's relevant and that's reasonable for the FBI to gather. And if they tell us something that's new or that they feel like they really need more time, then okay. But otherwise, we're not going to agree here. Democrats are going to oppose the Kavanaugh nomination. I suspect Republicans will support it, and we're going to get a pretty close vote that I suspect will be Kavanaugh ultimately being confirmed. Democrats act as if that's not how the process works, that the minority has the ability to just say, hey, we don't like this thing. We really don't like this thing. We think you're wrong, and therefore we should stop it. Well, you know, that's not how other votes have gone when Democrats are in the majority, and I don't think this is how this one's going to go either. I think Republicans will vote. It will be narrow. Kavanaugh will be confirmed at this point.
Okay, so you do think it will be a confirmation, and that vote happens when? Do you think that's this week or early next week? What's your sense?
I guess early next week. I mean, I think that they are serious about, hey, we want Flake on board. Flake said we got to give the FBI a week to look at the allegations that have been made here and see if there's sort of a path to getting more clarity than an allegation and a vehement denial. And I think Grassley has been pretty consistent on, here's the timeline, here's how we're going to go. And he's, delayed some, but this is the delay. I think that the majority leader is going to schedule a floor vote on the confirmation. This is a situation where if we're holding the vote, it's almost certain a confirmation. If we don't hold the vote and it delays and delays and delays, that means somebody behind the scenes is saying, no way, we're going to tank this thing. This is over.
Well,
and
that's
so
kind of
look
what
for, if the vote's scheduled, I think it's a very, very good chance Kavanaugh's confirmed.
Sure. I mean, but that's always been the logic, right? So that's why when they called for the vote last week, I said, oh, they got the votes. And then you have the hubbub there right before the committee does their vote, and it's held up. I mean, I thought, so something must have changed between when they called for the vote and what happened Friday afternoon.
Yeah, well, I don't think that was... it was not a surprise. It was a surprise for you and me.
Right.
But the fact that Grassley recognized Flake meant that they had talked about it ahead of time. Everybody was cool with it. I suspect that gives some cover for other members who are kind of like Flake on the fence but are still running for re-election. Because if something did come out, like all of this is conditioned on things being the same as they are right now. If we don't learn anything else over the next week, I really believe Kavanaugh's confirmed. If we learn more details or there's a reason why we would delay more than Kavanaugh's toast, I just see this as a situation where I understand people disagreeing. I understand people reaching different judgment calls on whether Kavanaugh is a good candidate for the Supreme Court or not. But again, we have a vote to sort that out. And right now, I think most Republicans have said, hey, we think Kavanaugh is a good jurist, and these allegations have not been corroborated in a way that makes us want to derail this process.
You're talking about the vehement denials. That's what's interesting, too, because I looked at some polling out there, which I think is poor. There's a Reuters Ipsos poll that I think you could sail the USS Alabama through for the holes in its methodology. But people that are locked down, what it did show me, even though that I may disagree with the way it slanted, it does show me that there are the majority of Americans that are just for sure how this all went down. And it leaves me on my little island, as always, going, I'm not sure. That was two people making good cases for themselves. And I see how the politics of it from the Democrats makes it very suspect. But to say I heard anything in that meeting that made me say, aha, it was the butler in the reading room with the candlestick.
Yeah, and I think that the thing that Republicans have to realize is if you confirm Kavanaugh at this point, this is essentially, I'll call it Clarence Thomas 2.0, even though the facts are a little bit different. You know, you're going to have that consistent cloud and criticism over the rest of his career. Now, there are a lot of conservatives that look at Justice Thomas and say, look, I mean, he is an awesome Supreme Court justice. He's done a fantastic job. His decisions are great. But there's that cloud, that thing that's brought up whenever somebody disagrees with him. They point out, you know, well, these allegations were made. Kavanaugh's going to suffer that same fate, I suspect. Will that be enough to say, well, we're not going to confirm him at this point? I think politics does matter, that Republicans are saying, okay, Feinstein held this. She wasn't caring about Dr. Ford. She held this, tried to roll a political hand grenade in the room. These allegations have not been corroborated to a sufficient level for me to say, okay, well, I'm going to thwart his nomination. And I think it's going to come down to just a straight-up vote. The senators are going to have to go home and explain their votes. Doug Jones in Alabama explaining his no vote. Well, good luck with that. I mean, he was already going to have a tough time, but if he votes against Kavanaugh in a state like Alabama, I would not want to be explaining that politically. I admire him for taking a tough vote back home, but from an electoral standpoint, I mean, that's... it's like falling on a hand grenade.
Well, it makes me think that he, and I guess people around him think there's no chance in 2020 for him, you know, with that being laid out. 1:30, we'll check news, and Dr. Bill's forecast will come right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1:34, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile of this Monday. Continuing conversation with our buddy Cameron Smith, AL.com, and the R Street Institute. And if people want to reach out to you on Twitter, how do they find you?
You find me at D. Cameron Smith, and we can have all the best words together.
We can, for sure. Okay, I want to get into your latest opinion piece over at AL.com, but I do want to round this up, because you and I talked during the break in an impassioned way, and this is something I was saying, pretty much on every vote that Doug Jones has faced here in the Senate, and I was watching it. I was wondering if vote by vote, what Senator Doug Jones did was any kind of tell, was a barometer of what chances Doug Jones himself and people around Doug Jones thinks he has for 2020. You know, is it a tell?
Yeah, and I think where we are with Jones is, first of all, I appreciate his pragmatism and the fact, you know, I think he genuinely, to this point, has tried to call it like he sees it. I would argue that like he sees it is not like it. But I get that. With the Kavanaugh vote, if Kavanaugh comes up for a floor vote and Kavanaugh's confirmed and Jones is a no vote, which it appears that he is, that is just a ready-made crushing political ad in Alabama. And it signals to me that, you know, maybe we see a little bit of a turn in Jones, that rather than trying to really balance a lot of these votes, maybe we see a shift to the left, and he says, I'm looking at after Trump, looking at 2020, I may not be the senator from Alabama, but, you know, there might be other opportunities. I don't know that that's necessarily what he's looking to do, but I can tell you, voting against Kavanaugh in a state like Alabama is just going to be really hard to defend.
speaking of trying out, like you just said, by the way, too, you pressure wash the bloom off the rose for me. You know, last week I was having to hat in hand talk about how impressed I was with Lindsey Graham after all the Lindsey Graham bashing I've done over the years. But in due fairness, I said, way to go, Lindsey Graham, way to be transparent, pull the curtain back, let her rip. And he said, well, what? What did you tell me during the break?
He's trying out for Attorney General. I mean, this is obvious. I mean, I don't blame him. Like, I think he's looking at it and saying, hey, Trump is not, he does not like this Mueller thing's over. Sessions is gone. I'd like to be Attorney General. So, like, you know, let me show that I got the fire. And he did that. So, I mean, good tryout. I like it.
Man, you just, like, I had this warm, fuzzy thing that Lindsey, I was like, oh, this is great. Somewhere I can, you know, find commonality. I love to find commonality with different people that I normally don't. And it's just a run through for AG. All right, I do want to talk about two things. Number one, you're going to be on the TV coming up this week.
Yep, PBS Frontline was doing a special on Trump and the rule of law. And I sat down and talked to them for that. And so I'll have probably a 15-second to 30-second spot. So if your listeners want to sit and watch PBS Frontline and look for me, then, hey, you know, I think it's 8-7 Central or 7-8 Central, one of the two.
Right.
Just sit in front of the TV.
Or we'll cut it out of the feed there from PBS and put it up on Twitter. How about that?
Yeah, I love that. That's better.
Okay, we could do that. And yeah, that's the reality. 15 to 30 seconds, that means they interviewed you probably for 15 minutes.
Oh, no, I think more like an hour. So, I mean,
there you go.
Time well spent.
Yeah, there you go. That's TV for y'all. And then I want to point people over to AL.com and your piece, An Immigrant Story, The American Dream, and a Ride to the Airport. That's a great read, Cameron. Well done.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. This was interesting. I was going to D.C. They were picking me up. It was a Lyft driver in the morning because I get on those early planes.
Cameron, you there? Have we lost Cameron? We lost Cameron to somewhere in the wilds of Alabama. Okay, let's do this. We'll put him on hold, and Philip, in the control room, if you could pick up and give me a green light, we get that signal back. Because I want y'all to hear this. It's pretty interesting. So he gets in. The Lyft driver picks him up at 4:30 in the morning, and he talks. And I love these conversations. I've had these with Uber and Lyft drivers, taxi drivers over the years, talking to people about what brought them to the United States and kind of what life was like, where they came from. And you get, a great insight into other countries. And Cameron lays it out here in this piece over at AL.com. I guess we've lost him. Okay, well, I will do this. We will put the story up on Twitter. Gosh, I hate that. I hate that. The weak links of technology, but you can check it out on another technology platform over at twitter.com. All right, we could also grab calls at 343-0106, 343-0106. Somebody here saying, what did you play from Ross Perot earlier? I'll play it again. This is a clip from Ross Perot. All I was talking about is, as the president laid out, and the president, Jared Kushner and Lighthizer and all that, have worked this new trade deal out with Mexico and Canada. Same three players as NAFTA, but a different brand now, the USMCA. I don't know how to say it other than USMCA. They laid out the case here for reciprocal nature, parity between countries here in the in trade, and making sure that you didn't open up markets and have jobs flowing out of the country to elsewhere. And I said, you know, that sure sounded like back in 1992, presidential debate on the stage, Bill Clinton, George Bush Sr., and Ross Perot.
Yes, I'd like to direct my question to Mr. Perot. What will you do as president to open foreign markets to fair competition from American business and to stop unfair competition here at home from foreign countries so that we can bring jobs back to the United States?
That's right at the top of my agenda. We've shipped millions of jobs overseas, and we have a strange situation because we have a process in Washington where after you've served for a while, you cash in, become a foreign lobbyist, make $30,000 a month, then take a leave, work on presidential campaigns, make sure you got good contacts, and then go back out. And if you just want to get down to brass tacks, first thing you ought to do is get all these folks who've got these one-way trade agreements that we've negotiated over the years and say, fellas, we'll take the same deal we gave you. And they'll gridlock right at that point. Because, for example, we've got international competitors who simply could not unload their cars off the ships if they had to comply. You see, if it was a two-way street, just couldn't do it. We have got to stop sending jobs overseas. To those of you in the audience who are business people, pretty simple. If you're paying $12, $13, $14 an hour for factory workers, and you can move your factory south of the border, pay a dollar an hour for labor, hire a young 25, that's assume you've been in business for a long time, you've got a mature workforce. Pay a dollar an hour for your labor, have no health care, that's the most expensive single element making a car, have no environmental controls, no pollution controls, and no retirement, and you don't care about anything but making money, there will be a giant sucking sound going south. So we, if
there you go. So Ross Perot from back in 1992, when, by the way, they laughed at him back then. Maybe they were laughing just because he said giant sucking sound, but calling his shot way back then. All right, we'll go to the phones, 343-0106, 343-0106, and let's go to Patsy first in Daphne. Hey, Patsy.
Hey, wanted to point out Lindsey Graham speaking out at the hearing, that could have been his discernment as well as a plus for him. We want an attorney general who can discern and speak out. It was kind of a, well, he wants to be attorney general, so he's going to speak out now. But you know what I'm trying to say? It can
okay,
be
but
both.
Let me throw this out. So, if to President Trump loyalty is the big issue, you have the man who stood with him, the first senator to endorse then candidate Donald Trump right here in Mobile, putting the hat, well, actually put the hat on here, didn't officially endorse till a couple weeks later. You had Lindsey Graham. Remember the president's battles back and forth with Lindsey Graham? You know, here's a situation where you would replace Jeff Sessions, who stood and really, I would say, put the planks of the platform together that President Trump ran on with that Main Street versus Wall Street conservatism, and you would replace him with the, I would say, the polar opposite of a populist message, and that would be Lindsey Graham. So, I mean, I hear what you're saying, Patsy, but I wonder if you would be making a fair trade there if you went with A.G. Lindsey Graham.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm just coming from a less complicated, knowledgeable place. And Lindsey Graham had also said, well, when it comes to this, so he knows where to draw the line. And it could be that he is beginning to see, you know,
maybe. Hey, you may be right, Patsy. I mean, you may be right. I think what Lindsey, I mean, and that's a fair opinion. My opinion was that Lindsey Graham had enough of the what he thought was an unfair process and was letting her rip, but maybe. And Patsy, I appreciate your call. And yeah, it was, you know, as Cameron blowing the bloom off the rose for me, where I was like, oh man, Lindsey Graham, I finally get to agree with Lindsey Graham. And then he said, oh, you know, he's just just trying out for AG, which is probably the truth. Let's go to Ron in Spanish Fort next. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Sean, how are you?
I'm good, man. What's up?
Good. I just wanted to let you know, the Democrats, as I call them, should be ashamed of their despicable behavior with the Kavanaugh hearing, or what we could call the high-tech lynching. And I called Doug Jones' office today just to let him know that he doesn't, you know, we don't work for him. He works for us. And a no vote for Doug Jones will guarantee that I'll give him a no vote for his re-election.
Okay, but fairly enough. So I can't help myself, Ron. You know this is how I am, why everybody is mad
at
me.
And I appreciate that about you.
Would you have voted for him anyways in 2020 against any Republican other than, like, the worst Republican ever? I mean, just any decent, like, Republican, would you have said, oh, I'm going to vote for Doug Jones?
No.
Okay. There's the play, right? There's the political play that he just says, you know what, Ron is not going to vote for me, so let me just let my true colors shine.
Well, I have one more thing too. I have a new theme song for the Democratic Party, and you'll appreciate this.
Okay.
Dirty deeds Done Dirt Cheap by AC/DC.
Oh, yeah. I've heard it once or 3,000 times. Good one. Yeah, I appreciate it. You know, but once again, the blade cuts both ways. Yes, the Democrats absolutely are doing the dirty deeds right now. Absolutely. But it happens both ways. And the problem is, because one does it to the other, that's what the question about, back to Lindsey Graham. God bless. Where am I in a situation where I'm... Lindsey Graham saying, where do we go from here? Right? Where do we go? If that's the new standard, then where do we go from here? Because if that is, if this is the new low, then the next time you have to go to the new lower low in these things, and I'm with you. I'm with you, Lindsey Graham. Imagine that. All right, we'll grab a couple more calls. And I want to, let me go back to text here, too. So Mike texts in and says, can Doug Jones be recalled? Y'all remember, he is voting, y'all, he's voting as a Democrat. He was a Democrat when he was elected. So, I mean, can we use the idea of the constituency in Alabama voting for Trump and Doug Jones not supporting what the bulk of people, but you can't recall somebody who's a Democrat for voting like a Democrat? That's actually what he's supposed to do, right? All right, let's go to... y'all, hold on. I got people, hold on. Y'all, hold on for 1 second. Be right back. Go to a quick news break. I got people want to talk some new NAFTA, and we'll do that when we return.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, 151 FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile. To the phones we go, 343-0106, and Doug is in Mobile. First up, hey, Doug.
Hey, Sean. If the Republican Party would grow some gonads, look at Mexico and now Canada, who said that would not happen, how far would we be along with President Trump? And furthermore, I hope Doug Jones enjoys his 2-year stint.
The reason
he was elected is because people did not think that special election was that important and didn't have the turnout.
And so also, it's turnout.
How important it is to get out and vote.
Well, it is turnout, but okay, day. Doug, I appreciate it. It was turnout, but it was also a candidate that was, and I'm not going to get off into the ruts here for a forensic discussion of the Roy Moore candidacy, but it was not the best foot forward for the Republicans. But once again, like, I'm looking at some more people on the email now. Doug Jones is voting like a Democrat. Doug Jones was a Democrat when he was elected. Now, you could want it to be different. I get that. You could try to bully and say, hey, if you want to get reelected in 2020. But in reality, Doug Jones knows what Ron and others have just said. You wouldn't vote for him anyways in 2020. So he might as well, go out and blaze of glory, right? You got a couple years. So just wait till you see what that looks like. All right, David next in Mobile. Hey, David.
Hey, Sean, I have a quick different take on Lindsey Grahamnesty. If you remember correctly, he came to national prominence under the Clinton impeachment scandal as a representative, and it was Ken Starr's staff that worked closely with the House Republicans to put on that case, and Lindsey Graham was one of the Republican representatives that put on that case. So it could be one friend, long-time 20-year friend, taken up for another long-time 20-year friend in that hearing the other day when Lindsey gave that impassioned.
You're like Cameron. Y'all are both ruining the by one chance where I was happy with Lindsey Graham. Thanks a lot, man.
Yes, well, we can't. It is a Monday, Sean. But real quickly on new NAFTA, I've become good friends with several Canadians on Twitter over the Bombardier and the NAFTA issue recently, and so I get a chance to see it from both sides, and. They really didn't give up a whole lot. Canada did to become a part of this deal. I mean, they gave up more access to their Canadian dairy industry markets. But you know, the limits that they agreed to were the same limits that they were going to agree to in TPP. It's just now it's going to be in the trilateral new NAFTA, and I call it new NAFTA because it's, you know, it, that brings memories of new Coke. It's going to be a lukewarm response.
But you're saying it's like Max Headroom is promoting this thing or something? What?
Well, it's going to be a lukewarm response to this trade deal.
Okay, and I understand you've probably delved into it more than most of us have already, but I know there's a lot of this stuff that has not even been out to the public. There's still a lot of details here. They weren't going to release till what, last night at midnight or something like that, just coming out. Have you read through the entirety?
I haven't read through the entire document, but I have read through several reports in national media outlets like the Washington Post and Bloomberg, and there are a lot of good things in this trade deal. I'm not blasting it. This deal is better than not having a deal at all. But there are some things that, you know, that are being called concessions by the Canadians that aren't really concessions because they had already agreed to them in past trade agreements that the Trump administration has already canceled.
Okay, I appreciate the call because, I mean, that's done, yeah, and that's done a lot of times in negotiations too, right? When you want to, you put something out, don't throw me in that briar patch. You know, don't make me do something. You know, something you're already doing in a negotiation. I'll tell you anything, but don't make me do such and such. And then you go, oh, you really got me between a rock and a hard place in this negotiation. I guess I will do that. Somebody says, same playbook used to get Jones elected being used against Kavanaugh. Yeah. Maybe in the same category in the Dewey Decimal System. Do the kids use the Dewey Decimal System anymore? Do y'all remember that? You remember having to learn that? Remember having to go into library skills and learn the Dewey Decimal? I don't think it's the exact same book, but it might be in the same card file there in the Dewey Decimal System. But once again, y'all understand this is not. You can have all the certainty in the world in your political beliefs and still got to understand the rules of the game. And to be incensed by the fact that Doug Jones is not going to vote to confirm Kavanaugh. Well, number one, you could have pushed, and listen, there were a lot of groups. I mean, that's why people were on this show. There were people booked on this show. They wanted to be on to talk about all the reasons to confirm Kavanaugh. What they were trying to do is push pressure here in Alabama back towards Doug Jones. I mean, I hate to break our hearts, but they really didn't care about us. They cared about Doug Jones. Although, I tell you, Shelby was at one point kind of wishy-washy. I don't think he is now, but he left a little bit of uncertainty. But to say you're, like, surprised and shocked, you say, well, the constituents want to confirm Kavanaugh because they voted for President Trump. But remember, he can say, well, the constituents voted for me. This is a representative republic. I'm here to represent the people and not on, you know, not everything. So, but he ran as a Democrat and he won as a Democrat. And to act surprised, I'm missing out there. Jay is in Mobile. Hey, Jay.
Hi, Sean. I think that you're exactly right. I'm very impressed with your show. I always enjoy listening to you because I think that you have good common sense approaches to everything. I think many times people forget that. I think, and I'd like to say two things. The history of the Democratic Party making sexual allegations against Republicans goes back all the way to, I want to say, Wyndham. They did it in Wyndham when they had a prostitute say that he had raped her. They came out. We've seen this, of course, obviously, as far as the playbook. They're just doing the Judge Moore playbook now on this new guy. They actually tried it with Governor Ivey. So really, they shouldn't be surprised at all. I'm really a little bit shocked that people are surprised.
I am, too. They're going, how can we get rid of him? I say he was a Democrat when he ran. He's not, I mean, he didn't pull a switcheroo. He didn't say.
No, they knew it was coming. Now, I want to say one other thing. It's time that the people of Alabama, and they are some very smart people, and there's also, let's be quite honest, some very dumb people.
Mm-hmm.
But as a whole, we need to start remembering this. You know, the leopard doesn't change its spots. You know, this reminds me of years ago when Alabama decided they wanted Don Sigelman to be governor. Well, they elected him on a lottery platform. And what is the first thing that happens when he runs for governor? They put the lottery up to a vote and vote the lottery down, which comes to the question, why did you vote for Don Sigelman then if you don't want a lottery?
Right, Jay, that's a good point. If y'all voted for him and then the thing he was backing took a nosedive, that's true. Now, we could get into all the discussion of why that happened, the outside influences. But listen, we're going to get another shot at that whole discussion, Jay, because hearing from Mac McCutcheon and others. Get ready, session 2019 in Montgomery, Lotto near the top of their stack. So they're going to be working. Also, gas tax in the mix as well. Ben, I can wait for session to start, but it's going to be an interesting one. All the cans that they kicked down the road last year for this election year, those cans will be raining down come 2019. Feinbaum on the way next. Y'all have a great one. See you in the morning.